Hey, good morning, Brother John.
How you doing?
I feel pretty good. Pretty good. Hey, it's nice here. How's it there?
Oh, it's supposed to. Actually, yesterday, you know, we didn't have any snow in Chicago in January and February. And sure enough, yesterday we got a little bit of snow, but not much is sticking. We might get a half an inch by the end of the day. Cloudy in the, you know, mid-30s with warmer weather coming over the weekend. So, you know, it's going to be fine. So cool. I can't complain. Nice. Cool is right.
Yeah, we're heading, we got some moisture supposedly coming our way, but you know, frequently here in Austin, the weather guys predict that, and then any number of things can keep it from actually precipitating.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens, but a little cool last night, but I kind of like that. That keeps the hot flashes to a minimum, so I got no complaints there.
Yeah,
I just sleep
for sure.
Pretty good.
Oh, yeah, I slept pretty good. You know, I've got a procedure this at 10 o'clock to get a port for to start my chemo in March for, you know, to make sure that the rectal cancer hasn't, any sneaky cells haven't kind of escaped and gotten through my system. So, yeah, I didn't, you know, I kind of got up about 3:30 because they said I couldn't do any, couldn't drink anything or whatever. So I took my vitamins, et cetera, about 3:30 and... I've been up most of the time since then, but overall, I can't complain.
Yeah, I got up about the same time. We're about on the same schedule these days.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I just did a bunch of stuff and got busy, but hey, we got some stuff to talk about that should be fun.
Yeah.
What do you want to start with?
Well, I'll tell you, I've got a topic here I didn't mention to you earlier,
okay.
And that is Jesse Jackson Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Jesse Jackson Jr. is, he is, I've always wondered as he's, you know, first thing is he's in the middle of getting a divorce and, you know, to make things interesting, they can't even figure out where to file for the divorce. His wife wants to file in Chicago, in Washington, and he wants to file in Chicago. And so all they're doing is keeping their lawyers, prosperous and busy and prosperous, with their fees.
Yeah.
But I'd always kind of wondered, how is Jesse Jackson Jr. making any money? And I thought, well, he's got deep pockets from his brothers. But then all of a sudden, about a week ago, it came out that Jesse Jackson is getting $138,000 a year between Social Security disability and workers' comp. Yeah, a little scary. So, and,
how's
so
that
that's,
possible?
Well, bipolar.
He is a United
depression.
States citizen, right? This isn't like some. He's not a citizen of Switzerland or something, is he?
No. I mean, this isn't, you know, socialization at its, you know, at its height. This is just merely a guy being able to, I'm sure, you know the ins and outs in order to. And I don't know what workers' comp is for a House of Representative.
Yeah, I don't.
But
either.
Bottom line is. So here's a fella who's in the middle of divorce. Both him and his wife are, you know, just served sentences. They're felons, and then of course he gets in the paper 2 days ago, because he's and believe me, I have total respect for him. I'm sure he's really screwed up. In fact, after his his interview in which he pleaded, "Poor little me, don't pick on me," I am convinced he is screwed up. Mentally,
yeah.
I mean, he's just mixed up left and right. So that was kind of an interesting story here in Chicago, since since that's where he now lives. And of course, out of that $138,000, his problem is he's got to deal with child support, which he's trying to get reduced.
Okay.
So, you know, in other words, everything this man said during his interview just either left your head scratching or saying you really
spinning
shouldn't.
Spinning or
spinning. Spinning, yeah. It was crazy. So that was kind of an interesting news item.
Yeah, we had kind of touched on that a few weeks ago, as I recall. But
yeah, it just
like
seemed
you got
to escalate.
Deets.
Yeah, it got more. It escalated just a couple days ago. You know, he could have probably kept it a low profile, but he decided he was going to go public with it and talk to the newspaper guys. And it's just, it's hard. He was just bouncing around with different topics, coming to no conclusion, leaving the impression that, you know, he's subpoenaed people that don't make any sense to be a part of, you know, testifying. And I'll just leave it at that. I'm, you know, just kind of, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. That's all I can say. And I'll just say one more thing about him. I went and saw this man probably 10, 12 years ago give a speech just four blocks north of me at the Chicago History Museum, and thought, man, this guy, you know, just based upon his speech, sound like he could have a political, you know, future. Well, obviously has gone by the wayside.
Well, anyone can give a speech. That's the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, just remember, Sam Kinison was a minister. A comedian, right?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, he was unbelievable. And yeah, he could give a good sermon, I'm sure, but then when he got back to his hotel room, you know,
yeah, he was
girls and
something
drugs
else.
And all kinds of stuff. Anyway, so
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad, sad, sad.
And you were just mentioning the other day about the Oscar, the Best Actor winner. What's his, Casey Affleck? Apparently,
yeah.
He hit the news yesterday. The first time I'd heard about it, you knew about it already.
Yeah.
In terms of him trying to refuting his allegations that he's been involved in, you know, sexual assault or whatever you want to call it.
Inappropriate sexual behavior.
Behavior,
assault.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but it's with some of his co-stars, I guess, and some of his earlier movies. Not like super early, but previous. Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. You know,
well, the thing is, when I mentioned it to you the other day, you know, I kind of labeled it as a Cosby side effect. You know, we're all sensitive about that now. We don't want to invest too much of our affections in a comedian or an actor if they're going to behave like that, because it just makes you feel bad. You know, it makes you feel bad they do it, but I mean, it makes you feel double bad that, oh, geez, you know, I voted for him, or I did this, or I watched his movie.
Yeah. Wow.
It could ruin his career if that sticks.
It's interesting how I know that there's a movie, Joan Crawford had a reputation that she worked very, very hard to make sure that she went to bed with her co-stars of any of her movies. Before the movies. And then one time they were interviewing one of her directors, and he said it wasn't just her co-stars, it was often her director.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
special.
Of course, then that's a different era. And of course, it was well kept secret.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
maybe for a while at least.
Yeah. Wow. Some of that stuff is astounding.
Yeah, it's crazy the way that people, you know, would behavior back then that was sort of like kind of, you know, wasn't either known that well, or if it, you know, wasn't exact, you know, people didn't think too much about it, I guess.
Well, the thing is, we always think to ourselves that, you know, these earlier times were better or more moral, or that we're in decay now. I'm beginning to wonder whether it's just a matter of simple reporting that we hear about it.
I think the classic example of that is, can you imagine Loretta Young and Clark Gable having an affair during the filming of a movie called Call of the Wild in the late 30s? She ends up having a child. She ends up taking a long trip to Europe in order to have the baby, and then you know, a year or two later, she adopts the child. And of course, we don't really officially get the full answer to any of this until, you know, like in the 70s and 80s. So there's a good example of how these things just weren't reported.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Or kept quiet. But quiet, I mean, just think, you know, if Loretta Young was a current day star, she couldn't take a trip to Europe without being noticed.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, the microscope would have gotten her.
Yeah, yeah, microscopic times. Good name for a journal.
So,
anyways, one of the other things, just to track back a little bit to Jesse Jackson Jr. and push that forward into that topic. You and I have been talking the last few days about what's going on with the presidential and congressional and Democratic and Republican politics.
Yeah,
and a lot of interesting stuff. And since you and I have talked about that, you know, we've had the address that President Trump made to Congress, and I've had a little time to look at it, and you probably have too.
Yeah.
So it's very, very interesting stuff. The Democratic response was interesting. Also, just 2 days before that, the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, elected their new leadership, and that in and of itself is quite a thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot going on, no doubt.
With this big bundle of string, but I'll probably start. Let's just do it chronologically. I'll start with the DNC stuff. There was quite a long campaign for these guys running for DNC chair and sub-chairs. And, of course, the reason that this was so contested and so interesting to me, anyway, is that there's a huge fight between the Bernie wing and the Hillary wing.
Mm.
And the Hillary wing is talking like progressives, just like Hillary kind of did, but not acting like progressives. They still want to embrace the big money. And in fact, the guy who got elected, the treasurer, kind of spilled the beans. He said, you know, yeah, I'm going to go after these big donors and get lots of money for us and kind of stuff. And like, there's a whole wing of the Democratic Party that, like, that's poison, right?
Yeah.
They don't want to hear that. And so, anyways, so they're still pretty conflicted. And in the end, just by the skin of his teeth, Tom Perez, who was Obama's man, Secretary of Labor, I think, or something, he made it in as the chairman. But, I mean, it was almost 50-50 down to the wire. And at the last second, you know, and sure, the second he was elected, it took two ballots, by the way. Second he was elected, he appointed the progressive guy, Keith Ellison, who's, you know, pretty progressive. He's a little bit, you know, not quite to their liking. There's other more progressive candidates who other people wanted. But anyway, he is the progressive guy, more progressive than Perez, and immediately Perez appointed him deputy chairman, which, of course, is a made-up thing. There is no such thing. And the idea is, you know, we'll trot Keith out anytime we need to have progressive credentials. Kind of like the way the Senate trots out Bernie anytime, the Democratic senators trot out Bernie anytime they want to seem progressive. So it's kind of an amazing thing. So we'll see what happens, you know, with the Democrats. But if they don't do something really different, they are not going to be perceived as substantially different than the Republican Party, and people are just going to vote Republican. And I can't say that I blame them.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends, progressive friends, who voted for Trump rather than vote for Hillary.
And it's
weird.
I mean, the whole thing here in the state of Illinois with respect to, even though Hillary took the state primarily because of Chicago, the downstate, there were just so many small towns devastated through Rust Belt, whatever you want to call it. They just, out of, you know, desperation, say, look, we need a change, and Trump was was the candidate,
yeah.
And so what are you going to do?
Yeah,
all I can say in terms of the DNC is that you know, obviously they're going to need money, and there's a variety of ways of collecting it. And I'm sure that it sounds to me like they're probably in pretty sad shape in terms of finances, and so they need to kind of punch up the buckles.
Well, actually, it turns out they're not in such bad shape financially. They do have a pretty steady flow of donations. The interesting theory I've seen put forward for, you know, why would big money guys put money into the Democratic Party? That's always kind of stumped me. I thought to myself, why do they do that? You know? When, in fact, some of these people have strong Republican leanings, but they still give money to the DNC. And I'm thinking to myself, why would they do that? And then I watched this progressive podcast this guy has. And he said, oh, it was Cenk Uygur, the Young Turks. He said, well, there's a really simple reason. It's because they are trying to get the Democrats who will toe the line. And who will vote their way on the big stuff when it comes time in the Senate or in the House of Representatives. So, you know, what it is that it, from a progressive point of view, it just keeps the party weak. It makes them like, slightly liberal Republicans or something, you know?
Yeah,
but
okay.
If you're going to take the money and you're going to vote, you know, for the most part, against your own constituents, then, you know, what's the point? Now, you know, they do have their social issues that differentiate the two parties, but if you follow the money, that gets tough. And people are starting to follow the money. That's why we had such a mess with this last slam dunk that Hillary Clinton thought she had. People are following the money. They are smart, you know, and they're young. So things are going to change. Things are going to change for sure. Well, what'd you think of the Trump stuff, the speech?
Well, I was just surprised that he was, you know, showed a little bit more restraint than he has in the past. Didn't go off on the rants as much. Kept the same, you know, the content didn't change that much. And so, you know, I'm amazed at how the, you know, the economy and the stock market is reacting to all this. And yesterday was probably as big a day as the stock market's had and reaching record heights. And it just seems like his kind of letting, you know, the financial industry off the hook and kind of trying to slightly get the regulation lowered has had some impact upon the way the economy is being viewed. If you look at the two things yesterday, for example, that the orders, the executive orders that he signed, one of them had to do with prisons and making, you know, reversing Obama's thing about privatizing. And the fact is that the privatizing just kind of feeds, you know, the economists, because that basically provides more, you know, to the economy and, yeah, more jobs. And it's amazing, because here in Illinois, there was a big deal about doing exactly what Obama did, and that is let's eliminate the privatizing the prisons, because, you know, although it's good business, and by the way, these prisons are throwing a lot of money to the Republicans.
Oh, yes.
That's part of the equation. And the other thing is, though, when you take a look at these prisons, though, they're in there for the money, and so as a result, the customer, or whoever you want to call the prisoners, they are the ones that are suffering as a result, because they cut corners and they don't get the rehabilitation and opportunities, etc. And that's the reason that they're in the process of discontinuing this in the state of Illinois for the state prisons.
Yeah, so. Well, it's a good move, because, you know, the other thing, too, is it breeds corruption. These prisons have lots of money because they cut corners all over the place. And so they take that money and they go to the judges in Illinois or wherever. Mm. And they are looking for more prisoners. What else? And so this makes for bad verdicts. And not only that, it gets even worse. What happens is that this... And this sounds really cynical, and I hate to say it, but, man, the numbers, I mean, a lot of people, not stupid people either, not conspiracy nuts, are saying, hey, this is all part of the voter suppression program.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's tough. I mean, that's hard. But, golly, that's what it is. I mean, I think to myself, well, you know, Do these people, and fill in the blank, whatever you want to call them, who are, you know, hate people of color and anything else, you know, do they really hate them? Maybe they don't. Maybe they just don't want them to vote. You know, that was a startling thought. It makes more sense in some ways.
When I was reading about these prisons, though, you know, although I'm sure they're anxious and, you know, keeping, you know, their business going, the bottom line is, quite often the deals that they're signing with the government, whether it be fed or state, require them to get paid for maintaining a certain level. In other words, assuming they have a certain level. So, for example, if they've only got, 75% occupancy, but they've been guaranteed 80%, they're getting paid as if it's 80.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, so there's some sweet, that's a lawyer making a good deal, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was a good deal for somebody. Probably not us.
Nope, but that's for sure.
Anyway, enough of that stuff. It'll make you sick if you keep talking about it. So, yeah, we were also going to talk about our buddy, Mr. Kubrick, and The Killing, his first movie.
Oh, yes, I went and I actually saw the movie The Killing, which is Stanley Kubrick's first movie, and it was just, it was film noir, filmed in 1956,
a heist movie. When you say film noir, what do you mean by that?
I mean that it's basically got a kind of a dark atmosphere to it. A lot of the scenes in the shadows, and that's kind of the atmosphere. Although I would say this is sort of towards the end of what's called the film noir era. The film noir era is usually considered like 40s through 50, early 50s. It's a heist movie that it's got Sterling Hayden. And this movie is very similar to another heist movie called The Asphalt Jungle that was filmed in the early 50s. And it's got just an incredible number of character actors. Elijah Cook Jr. It's probably his best role he ever had in a movie. It's got some people you'd recognize, such as Vince Edwards, people that were pretty popular in the 50s, and a lot of great character actors.
Wasn't Vince Edwards Dr. somebody?
He was Ben Casey.
Ben Casey, okay.
Yeah, there's Dr. It was in the height of the Dr. TV shows when you had both Dr. Kildare, Richard Chamberlain, and you then had Ben Casey was Vince Edwards. Vince Edwards plays a real good bad guy in this one. So, it all takes place at a racetrack and they get away with $2 million, but as usually it happens in these kind of movies, the whole, bank, the robbery was very successful, but somewhere after the robbery, things seem to fall apart, and before you know it, it just kind of blows up on them. And in fact, it's kind of interesting because Sterling Hayden ends up with all the money at the end because everybody else got killed. He checks his bag because they wouldn't let him take it on the airplane. His bag was too big because it had $2 million in it. It takes a pretty big piece of a big suitcase. So he says, okay, I'll do it. And sure enough, as they're putting the bag onto the plane, the bag opens and all of a sudden all the money just kind of blows away. And that's the end of the movie. Yeah, I guess I gave
harsh.
That. There was a. I should have given a spoiler alert. Sorry about that.
Spoiler alert, but hey, you know what? I think a movie like that, part of it's the plot, but a lot of it's the style, right?
Yeah, and I mean, talking just to beyond the movie, obviously, what happened is this movie was now considered a cult favorite. Roger Ebert even wrote a review on it as one of his favorite movies. And what it did, it was not a box office success, but it was a critical success. So as a result, it allowed Kubrick to be considered, by some of the studios when it comes to some of his other movies. But he was a perfectionist, and as we talked about the fact that you take a look at in the wide variety of things he did,
they're so different.
Space 2001 Space Odyssey, Barry Lyndon.
Barry Lyndon, so different than all the others. Wow.
Yes, I went and saw that movie once. I wasn't too terribly excited about it, except that it was very elaborate, very slow moving to me, at least at the time. You got, Dr. Strangelove.
Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, I mean, some pretty wild characters in that one.
Oh, I could go off on a Peter Sellers rant. That's a whole different area there.
Oh, yeah, we could spend some time talking about that man.
Very interesting fellow, but we'll pass that for now. But that's one of my more favorite actors, especially his last main role. Anyway, let's go on with Kubrick. Wide variety of stuff. What's your favorite?
I would say that I don't know. For some reason, his last movie kind of hit me. This Eyes Wide Shut. It didn't get great reviews. Took him forever to film it like he normally did. Yeah. Kind of like that one. I think the one that kind of makes the biggest impression upon me is The Shining, with Jack Nicholson.
Wow. No collaboration between us here, and that is my favorite.
Yeah. I think when it comes to impact on you and think, you know, it's amazing how, I was going out on one of my baseball trips and went to Indianapolis over Labor Day weekend, went into a convention hotel and didn't see one other person, person staying at the, and of course, immediately what came to mind was The Shining.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how this movie will seem to creep into your thoughts, at certain times.
There's the movie where they filmed in The Godfather, where they filmed what's his name, Luca Brasi getting assassinated.
Yeah.
Some of that scene kind of gave me The Shining creeps a little bit. And oddly enough, one of Rose's, our daughter's best friend, works at that hotel.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
and
dear.
He watched. And he actually saw. Speaking of actors, he saw what's his name, that Australian actor, Russell Crowe. Saw Russell Crowe throw a phone at somebody.
Ooh.
Yeah. Remember that? The big scandal on that one?
No, Russell Crowe seems to, he's had a variety of times he's gotten kind of caught up in things, so.
Yeah, borderline Mel Gibson kind of guy. Who is, by the way, rehabilitated, it seems.
Boy, there was a lot of Mel Gibson in the Oscars. I mean, they were constantly panning on him as other people were winning awards for his movies, his directorial, you know, for his movie.
I was stunned by that. And he looked so unnaturally happy. And I heard the
Scientology
word.
Yeah, he did.
Word.
I mean,
I heard the Scientology word. Uh-oh.
and it seemed at some point there were a couple of things. He kind of gave him a couple of digs and you were expecting. You know, he still had that, that smile on his face. I don't know if he was... what caused it, you know, but he just consistently seemed to be happy throughout the Oscars. And I don't mean to digress, but I can't resist commenting about my former employer who took it on the chin. Being an accountant. PwC, whatever you want to call it now. It's one of the final four big accounting firms left. And, I guess the latest, you know, this is a story that it's still got some traction as the Academy is pondering exactly what they're going to do in terms of hiring them again. At the very least, what they've come out with the fact is the two people that were, you know, doing the work there at the Academy, at the Oscar show, will no longer be doing it, was what came out.
I guess Emma Stone was she took the hit for distracting the guy.
Yeah, that her attractiveness is what caused
sick.
It. As he's, as one of the PW partners is, taking pictures and then sending them by text to his buddies, and sure enough. But you know, did we talk about the two envelope thing? Why do they have two different envelopes? Why do they have two envelopes for each award? And the way it works is that there are two entrances, that you can go stage left, stage right. So they're not necessarily sure, although they're virtually all of them go one way, there can be a last minute change where somebody's going to come in another way. So there are two people, PW, personnel, that are there, with a set of envelopes. So in effect, what happens is that, you know, they have the two sets because they don't really know which way they're going to come in. Emma Stone ended up coming in opposite the partner that got in trouble. So he, you know, is anxiously, he's waiting for, you know, the best actress. He's got his envelope. The woman, personnel has her envelope. And Emma comes in the other way. So sure enough, what envelope doesn't he discard? He doesn't discard the Emma Stone envelope. And sure enough, he gives it to Warren Beatty, and the rest is history.
Well, and Warren Beatty seemed to know something was wrong.
Well, Beatty, Beatty was just kind of, you know, he was concerned, and he, as much as he looked bewildered, he's probably the first one to realize things are screwed up.
Yeah.
And of course, he hands it over to Faye Dunaway, and she shouts out.
Let's her take the hit. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty wild moment in terms of the Oscar history. That'll kind of liven up the show, you know, because in fact they didn't get very good ratings.
You're right, they didn't. But I heard Jimmy Kimmel got good marks.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing that happened during the Oscars is the Gary from Chicago. Do you know about this?
Who?
Well, Gary from Chicago. There was. When we were watching it, remember this, the craziness they were going to do by having those people from the tour bus come in, and
yes.
And so there was a couple of they were going to get married. It was Gary from Chicago and his fiancee, and Gary seemed to be on a fair amount with Kimmel, and they kind of concentrated on them taking pictures of this and that, and in addition to the fact that. Denzel Washington comes up and does a mock wedding scene with them.
Oh, that weird.
So Jimmy Kimmel, it was decided that this Gary from Chicago and his fiance would be on his show on Monday night.
Yeah, well, I can see why.
Yeah, well, guess what? That didn't happen. It turns out that good old Gary's a had just gotten out of prison, and he'd spent 20 years in prison. I don't know, it had to do with the fact that he did some petty, his last couple crimes weren't that bad, but the problem is he was caught up in three strikes and you're out.
Yeah.
And so his last crime, I think, was just a petty theft, but it cost him 20 years to life, and he got out on good behavior or something.
Wow.
So all of a sudden they announce he's going to be on the show, and then they start doing a little background check, and I guess Gary and his fiance didn't quite make it because
of
his background.
Well, that tells you something too. I wonder if that was one of those jailhouse romances, which really happened.
I kind of was trying to do going to do a little bit about that. I'm not sure exactly how that worked out. But you know, there are a lot of women who write prisoners, and
yes,
establish relationships, and before you know it, they're meeting. They're visiting, and I'm not sure exactly how this one all came off. It'd be kind of interesting to see if that is the way it unfolded.
Yeah,
but Gary,
yeah,
you know, they call him Gary from Chicago. So that's the way he identified himself during the thing.
Yeah.
So there were some interesting things happening there at the good old Oscars to kind of liven things up.
Well, actually, this in an odd kind of way relates back to our friend President Trump and his pretty much triumphant joint address to the joint session there.
Yeah.
Now, it has to do with some of the stagecraft with the fellow who got killed in the SEAL SEAL raid. Now, there's a lot of controversy around this too. In that the father would not appear, and said, "Quit using my son as a shield to not comment on the raid, which was FUBAR." Evidently, these guys have a high success rate, and they're good at not, murdering lots of civilians and stuff like that. They really, these are the guys. I mean,
Right.
And number one, President Trump threw the generals under the bus, and at the same time threw Obama under the bus and said, oh, this was an Obama raid that was already planned, and the generals wanted to do it, and so I let them.
Yeah, there's
wow.
Then in the
press conferences, you ask Sean Spicer, Melissa McCarthy, whatever, hey, what's with this? Man, he won't answer any questions. He's saying, no, you're besmirching the memory of this SEAL guy who got killed. And just shuts it down, like, there it is, boom. And wow. Oh. So anyway, this is supposed to be like the high point of his, this is, people are saying, oh, it was beautiful, it was wonderful, and oh, so human, and we didn't expect something like that out of Donald Trump and all this stuff. But the backstory is just pretty much hideous, but the guys who bring it up and stuff like that seem really cynical and really partisan, and so it's all this big mess surrounding this thing. And of course, he's got all the houses, the House and the Senate under his thumb, so nothing's going to ever come of it. But man, if that was Hillary Clinton who did that,
well, it came out pretty well for Trump, as he cites the widow or the mother.
Yes, the widow.
I forget
yes.
which widow.
And
gets three-minute ovation out of it, milks it, doesn't do anything to stop them from applauding. And then makes a comment about the fact that he makes a comment that, and also the fact that the raid itself was successful. It created, it provided a lot of valuable information that can be used in the future. Now, who knows where in the hell that's coming from. But he all of a sudden turned that thing around in his speech to the House and Senate. So he did a good job on that one.
Well, yeah, he sure did. He's nimble, pretty nimble. And, of course, he used the teleprompter, which made a huge difference. Well, let's just see what happens going forward. If he stops tweeting, then we know something happened. That's what I'm going to look for. I'm just going to follow the tweets. If the tweets continue, then we know he's back
business
to business.
As usual.
Yeah, but if they don't, and also a big change last week too, Sean Spicer, you know, we can't really call him Melissa McCarthy anymore. He totally changed his stripes. The guy got better clothes, lost weight, learned how to smile.
Yeah, he smiled. He did a better job at tap dancing, that's for sure.
Wow, he's starting to look like a professional.
Yeah.
So anyways, well, you know, part of me is cynical and you know, as snarky as anybody else, but there's also a large part of me that's just going, okay, good. You know, this will lower the freakout level of the whole country and the whole world. Because people are freaking out about this guy with his tweets and the craziness and all that stuff. So the level of crazy was so low, and the level of professionalism has been so high, that I think that's going to cool things off a little bit. And, you know, as far as, you know, people thinking we're nuts and all that stuff. I saw a cartoon, John. You're going to like this. This cartoon, these two bald eagles are talking to each other. It's a New Yorker cartoon, of course. And these two bald eagles are talking to each other. And one says to the other, yeah, when I go over to Europe, I just tell them I'm a Canadian goose.
Ah, that's cute. Pretty funny.
Yeah. So, anyway, I don't know if we got done with our Kubrick stuff or not, but...
Yeah, I think we pretty well did as we kind of moved around. I've got one little comment to make on sports, and that is last night, Northwestern, their basketball, they're the last major conference team not to play in the NCAA tournament, and they ended up winning last night on a crazy, the game's tied with a second and a half left, and they throw a pass the complete court, it goes underneath, and the guy catches it and makes a layup, and the game's over with. So in terms of sports right now in Chicago, everything is about Northwestern. Of course, Northwestern being a Northwestern grad, I kind of am eating it up, and so I typically don't watch the sports program called Mike and Mike in the morning with Mike Greenberg, who's a Northwestern alum, and Mike Golick, who's a Notre Dame, because it doesn't deal enough about baseball for me. But I've kept it on from 7 o'clock on, kind of, because Greenberg, the alum, the Northwestern alum, has just kind of gone crazy describing this and that. And so I think, you know, what's going to happen, you're going to find a lot of those Hollywood celebrities who, you know, have a Northwestern background, like Seth Meyers. He's a Northwestern guy, and there's a whole slew of them that'll all of a sudden come out of the woodwork and be rooting for Northwestern in the tournament. although they probably won't go very far. We'll just have to see how it plays out.
It'd be nice if they did, though, you know. I mean, Northwestern's a good school, scholastically, and I think a lot of those players are like real students and stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, Northwestern in both, and you know, the thing is that their notoriety sports-wise in recent years has been their football team, which made it to the Rose Bowl in the mid-90s and has been to probably at least 10 bowl games since then, and actually won a bowl game this last year. So so now it's nice to see what they did is they ended up getting a coach, a guy named Chris Collins, whose father is Doug Collins, is a kind of a basketball institution in terms of playing and coaching. And so his son Chris went to Duke four years, has a nice pedigree, and then was an assistant at Duke. And so the Northwestern hired him to be their coach last year, and he's brought a lot of respectability to the program. Northwestern plays kind of a very methodical type of ball. They're not a run-and-gun team. They're more settled down with a set offense, you know, usually using the whole time limit. I think it's 35 seconds or close to it. And trying to, you know, for Northwestern to win, and their defense is their whole thing. That's the strong suit for them. They're not a real good shooting team. So the key for them to win is to keep the score down to in the mid-60s. If the score's in the mid-60s or low 70s, they got a shot to win. But if they're gonna be playing with a team that all of a sudden gets hot and starts scoring a lot of points, no contest.
Well, what's the size factor there? How are they height-wise?
Well, you know, Northwestern's probably, they've got a couple guys that are like 6'8", 6'9". They're not what you call overwhelming in size. It's just, you know, guys usually 6'5", 6'6". The fact is they do seem to do pretty good under, you know, in terms of rebounding. And so it's just they play good fundamental ball, particularly on defense. It just seems like all of a sudden the other team has just got a couple seconds to shoot and they're throwing up a ball, and they played last night at Northwestern, so the place was up for grabs. And it kind of fits in well because Northwestern's in the process of remodeling their basketball arena so that they're going to make it bigger. And with this success, it'll kind of feed into, to the upgraded facilities that they're going to have available to them in a couple of years. So,
are they good with the 3 points?
They, like I said, they got one or two guys that are pretty good with the 3 points. They just don't score a lot. They seem to run into a lot of cold spells during the game where they just have to hunker down on defense and just keep the other team from scoring. And
they must be good runners then.
They're just endurance. They're good fit. They're a fit team. They're just constantly on the other team in terms of defense. They're just sticking like glue to their opponents.
And I bet they could do a pretty good full court press if they have to.
Yeah, and they, you know, the thing is that they, at this point, it's amazing. You don't see as much full court press as you used to.
No,
I don't know why.